I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is intern pastor Dan Ruth from the Christ Lutheran Church on Capitol Hill in St. Paul.
Let us pray. God of mercy, as those here elected by the people of Minnesota gather together this afternoon, we give you thanks for the blessings of this state. We give you thanks for the lakes and streams that provide water. We give you thanks for the rich soil that provides us food and resources and minerals. And we give you thanks for the people who are our life. As those here gather today to deliberate and to discuss and to argue and to act, help them to deliberate with wisdom. Guide their discussions with fairness and justice, and give them the strength and courage to act out of our shared hope that there is abundance for all. Help us share in that abundance. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Yeah. Good job. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Salzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Spark, Stump, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Weger. Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. First order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith returned. Senate files 1755, 1215, and 1675. Signed, Albany Mathewis, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage of the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments to concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file 1302, a bill for an act relating to metropolitan government, providing modifying provisions governing Metropolitan Sandy. Livable Communities Fund. Senate file 1302 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewis, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Pappas.
Which bill is this we're doing?
1302.
Oh, there it is. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1302 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Senator Pappas' motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Sparks, did you have a motion to make?
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments to concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file 167, a bill for an act relating to unemployment insurance, making various policy housekeeping and style changes. Senate file 167 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewis, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House on Senate File Number 167, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Sparks motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. What is Senator Pappas? I would suggest if you have messages at the desk here, you probably shouldn't be on the telephone. You should be ready to go and take these things. And Senator Pappas or Senator Prettner-Solin? Senator Pappas?
Next message is on Senate File 1070. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments of concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 1070, a bill for an act relating to liquor, modifying liquor regulations, etc. Senate File 1070 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewis, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1070 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
All right. And we could find these changes in the House Journal on May 14th, page number 6848 to pages 66 to 52. So, Senator Pappas, tell the body that the changes that are in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, this is the Omnibus Liquor Bill, and the House made two changes. They cleaned up the state fair language. The original bill authorized the state fair to sell liquor, but the vendors sell liquor, not the fair, so that's fixed. And with the University of Minnesota, it limits the university to seven new locations for a liquor license instead of it being unlimited. Previously, it was up to the Board of Regents. The seven will include venues such as the Ted Mann Concert Hall and the Weissman. And they'll have this permanent authority rather than have to get special event licenses. It also keeps a current law, which was deleted by accident, which would prohibit a liquor license on the campus of the College of Agriculture.
Renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1070. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Any further discussion on the bill? Secretary will give Senate File 1070 its third reading.
Senate File 1070, a bill for an act related to liquor, modifying liquor regulations, authorizing intoxicating liquor licenses, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators, have you voted? Desire to vote? Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 56 ayes, 4 nays. The bill is passed, and its title agreed to.
The next message is on Senate File 1724. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments of concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 1724, a bill for an act relating to human services, making changes to licensing provisions, etc. Senate File 1724 is herewith returned to the Senate.
Senator Prettner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1724 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committee on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is reports of committees. They are printed on today's agenda. Senator Pogemiller, we're on the reports of committees.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. The next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. There are two printed on today's agenda without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is second reading of House bills. There's one printed on today's agenda without objection, second reading of House bills. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are three authors' motions. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Also, there are a couple of resolutions on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be forwarded to the Rules Committee. Remaining on motions, Senate bill introductions. They're also printed on today's agenda without objection. First reading of Senate bills. Okay, now, calendar. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, I'd like to go on general orders for two bills, and then we would take a couple conference committee reports. We'll be recessing for the Rules Committee either before or after the conference committee reports. And then, so I would move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The committee shall be in order.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pogemiller.
I'd like to designate number 20, House File 1758, and number 40, House File 116. So I would like to yield to Senator Olson.
First bill on the general orders will be number 20. House File 1758, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, when this committee do arise, I move that House File 1758 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on the bill, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm bringing forward today the Minnesota Plastic Card Security Act because of the 45 million people whose cards were breached this past January. And that breach began just outside our door here in St. Paul. These cardholders have had to have their cards reissued because their information was held improperly by a company for over 3 years. I'm interested in addressing this issue and protecting these consumers because of the alarming increase in frequency of large-scale data breaches involving financial information. This is just the latest breach that has occurred of sensitive cardholder information. This is a consumer protection bill that puts into state law the payment card industry data security standards, known as PCI, that merchants are already required by contract to follow regarding the storage of magnetic stripe data from credit and debit cards. Merchants will still be able to store account numbers, names, and expiration dates. This bill is prohibiting the storage of CVV2 and PIN numbers, which are really the key to making counterfeit cards. Currently, Visa MasterCard standards expressly prohibit the storage of this information subsequent to the completion of a transaction. The proposed legislation moderates the impact and cost of financial institutions by allowing them to recover expenses associated with reissuing cards when merchants mishandle sensitive account information. The costs include notifying affected cardholders of the breach, canceling and reissuing impacted cards, closing and reopening affected accounts, and other costs associated from fraudulent account charges due to the breach. This legislation is an important and necessary first step toward protecting the financial information of the millions of credit and debit card users in Minnesota. Through the course of the committee hearings on this bill, we have made numerous changes to this legislation to accommodate and address the concerns that have been raised by retailers, particularly grocers, and some of those changes include providing a one-year delayed implementation date, provided an amendment I'll be introducing is accepted, which will allow them retailers to have an opportunity to look at their current systems and make sure that they are in compliance. Making it clear that we are prohibiting a double recovery by financial institutions so that there won't be any way that a retailer would have to be held accountable more than one time for the same expense. Allowing a 48-hour window for PIN transactions to be completed so that this information will not have to be disposed of until the retailer is certain that the transaction has been completed. And also, we've addressed in a number of different ways decreasing the liability of merchants. At this time, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A2 amendment and explain the changes in that amendment.
Secretary will report the Olson A2 amendment.
Senator Olson M. moves to amend House File 1758 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 10 as follows. Page 2, line 31. This is the A-2 amendment.
Senator Olson on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The effect of the amendment is to address stakeholder concerns and to make certain that we accomplish consumer protection in a way that will have the least impact possible on the retailers affected. And I should also say that it's my understanding at this point, by incorporating this amendment, that the retailers and grocers are neutral on this bill, and it will allow us then, as I said, to address consumer protection issues that were brought to the fore with the recent credit card breaches. Basically, what the amendment would do is it makes it addresses the following concerns. The effect of the amendment is to combine changes to the original bill that would delete language that provides private remedies for financial institutions that was in the original bill, and that was deleted in committee but had remained in the House bill. But it also does not include the language that was added to the bill by Senator Higgins that provided a private remedy for cardholders. And this was to satisfy concerns of the retailers and grocers. And the second thing the amendment does is it removes the Senate language that exempted entities that process fewer than 20,000 transactions per year. We were informed by the stakeholders that while that was an attempt to address their concerns, it really didn't apply to anyone, and that they would instead have preferred that the effective date be moved to August of 2008 to give them time to meet compliance. And so those changes are incorporated by this amendment.
Any further discussion, Senator Wergen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I can't get the amendment on my screen, so I can't see what it's doing. And secondly, if I understood you right, Senator Olson, would Senator Olson yield?
She will yield.
Senator Olson, if I understood what you said right, there was a threshold of 20,000 transactions to protect the smaller merchants, but now that's been removed and not even the smallest merchants are protected.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Senator Wergen, Initially, this change was suggested to us by the merchants, and so to accommodate their concerns, we made this change. However, they then came back to us and said that that really did not apply to someone, really there wouldn't be many people who would fall within that change, and so they preferred that we do what we've done with this amendment, which is to extend the date for them to comply to August of 2008. And with that change, they've withdrawn their objection to the bill.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I can't get the amendment on my computer, so I'm very uncomfortable with that. But if Senator Olson would yield again.
She will yield.
Senator Olson, what changes if we delay the start date? What changes between now and then for the small merchants so that they can deal with this issue without it costing them a great deal of money? I understand where the companies that are issuing the card have substantial resources to draw from, and I understand where some of the larger corporations have substantial resources to draw from for some of this, but having been a small shop owner for 20 years, you don't always have. And I'm wondering how this amendment makes it comfortable, because exactly the same thing will happen. It'll just happen a little bit later, but perhaps there's something I'm missing.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, basically, as you know, because we had conversation about this in committee, but basically, what this bill does is implement into law, for the purpose of consumer protection, agreements that are already in place between the retailers and the financial institutions issuing the cards, and the Visa MasterCard contracts, I should say. But the concern was that there might be something that a small merchant was doing inadvertently. And Senator Wergen, on both sides of this issue, both from in terms of financial institutions and in terms of the retailers and grocers, there are small and large stakeholders on both sides of this issue. And so the idea was to look for something that would be a fair balance between the two groups, and that's what this bill has attempted to reach. Basically, my understanding, and from what I've been told, for those who have the concern about the inadvertent lack of compliance, that what will happen is that by moving the window forward, it will give them an opportunity to have someone come and check their system, and that there's a very minimal cost of perhaps around $100 to run a software system or to have a software system that can check and make sure that they are complying with this particular aspect of that contract. Now, there may be some broader aspects of the contract that aren't addressed by this bill that would be more complicated in terms of compliance, but that's not what this piece or this bill is getting to.
Senator Higgins, did you have amendments on...
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson?
The other thing that was specifically done to address the concerns of the stakeholders, the retailers and the merchants, was to remove the private right of action, whether by the financial institution or by a private person, and that was specifically done at their request.
Okay, we're on the Olson A2 amendment. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, and thank you to Senator Olson for continuing to work with the various parties to put this together. I was the person who goofed it up in the Judiciary Committee, so I'm glad to see that it got fixed. Members, the issues surrounding credit card security are massive, and I think we all understand at some level how devastating it can be when somebody can grab that information. And it isn't just one person's information they get, it's thousands of people's information they get. This will help our merchants, this will help the financial institutions, and in turn, that will help all of us.
Further discussion. A question, Kerr is on the motion by Senator Olson that House File 1758 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders will be number 40, House File 116, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, House File 116 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on the bill, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the Consumer Right to Know bill. For members that have been here, this bill has passed this body 2 years, but for the new members, I will give you a brief description of what the bill does. Consumers should have the right to know who they are giving their personal information to, which country is being collected in, and to choose if they want to give them their personal information. Currently, that's not the law. Credit card fraud and identity theft have been increasing dramatically during the past years. What this bill would do, Mr. Chair and President, is when a calling or being called by a sales or service center, you have the right to ask where the call center is located, and the call center representative will have to disclose that location. The current language excludes businesses. The bill is supported by the Communication Workers of America and also endorsed by the AFL-CIO. That's the bill, Mr. Chair.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would the author of the bill be willing to answer?
He will yield. Senator Hand.
Thank you. I'm just reading the bill here. You mentioned that citizens of Minnesota should have the right to know where the person they're talking to, what country they're from. Why should they have that right? I'm not quite clear if I understand what the logic is, why that should be a right to know where people are calling from.
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Hand. I simply think because it's a consumer protection bill, and I think obviously we talked about fraud and identity theft have been increasing, and so what it would simply do is just request that they would have that right to know where that information is being passed. We did make some changes in the Commerce Committee to take out Senator Gerlach, removed the state, and that's the bill that is before us.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so if I understand the logic, then, is what we're saying is that people from other countries are more likely to be engaged in fraudulent behavior because they're from another country. Is that correct?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, I don't know that that's necessarily true. What I would say is that a couple years ago I carried a bill that tried to protect consumers when their identity is stolen, and we saw locally how hard that can be to try to restore that. So I think what this bill would do is just allow those people to have that right to know who they're giving their personal information to.
Pam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still not clear if I understand what the logic is that would suggest that just because someone is calling from another country, they would be more likely to engage in fraudulent activity. But I'm trying to understand what the fraud is here. It seems that what the fraud would be is if someone asks you what country you're from and you say, I'm from Bloomington and you're really from Bangladesh, that's fraud to say that. But that seems to be the only thing in the bill that it's saying is a violation or that constitutes a fraudulent behavior. And I'm not quite clear who's harmed by that or what the harm would be that would make that fraudulent. And even if it does happen, what do you do about it if the person is from another country? How do you go and prosecute them?
Senator Murphy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Hand, that's exactly what we're trying to attempt to rectify in this bill. If there is some sort of fraudulent behavior occurring outside of the United States, we're powerless to take care of it. If it happens here in this country, our department and under the bill that Senator Sparks has, they can go after those folks. But, if you don't know, if some illegal activity is happening, say in South Africa, and it's one of our consumers who are footing the bill because of that fraudulent behavior, we've got no recourse.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I'm not clear if I understand what the recourse would be under this bill. If we say we can't prosecute for fraud when people in other countries are engaging in fraudulent behavior, and now we say we've got a new fraud, which is telling somebody you're from a country that you're not from, how does that make it any easier to prosecute that particular fraud than any other kind of fraud?
Senator Scheid.
Well, members, I think it's real important to note here that obviously you're doing business probably with an American company. Let's say it's Capital One or American Express, and you place a call. Your recourse is against that company who's hired or contracted to have provide that service of a call center, no matter where it is. And the action isn't against that call center, it's against the company with whom you're doing business. So obviously that would be your recourse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Scheid, is that the meaning of the word person then on line 2.11 when it says it's fraud for a person to willfully violate the section, that we should interpret that to mean a corporation?
Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, we're working off the House file, and actually that provision was removed from the bill, section 2.1 to section 2.7. And that might help clarify it for you.
Mr. President, I'm looking at House File 116, first in Grossman. Is that not the right?
Mr. Chair, the bill is heard in the Rules Committee, and we moved the Senate position out. That provision was removed in the Commerce Committee, so that's not even part of discussion at this point.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the author yield for a question?
House file number, but it's... Senator Limmer, state your question again.
Yes, would the author, Senator Sparks, yield?
He will yield. Yeah. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sparks, I understand that fraud is a violation of this, and the first question I wanted to ask is, would political polling, political calls, political fundraisers be included in this section of law? I sometimes get involved in that, and I just want to know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I'd have to pull the statute. Maybe I can get back to you on that. I don't know if it does or not right now. I'll look up that statute for you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Limmer.
Senator Sparks, the other question that I wanted to ask is, and I think it's somewhat following up on the question that Senator Hand brought up, is, if someone outside of the state of Minnesota is making a call for a business and the business is directed into the state of Minnesota, is that in and of itself a violation of law, according to your bill? Or is it the failure to disclose that they're calling from outside of the state the violation?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, Subdivision 3 talks about non-applicability business-to-business calls, so it's my understanding that we remove businesses completely from the bill.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chairman, that isn't the question I asked, Senator Sparks. The question is, what constitutes the fraud? Is it simply hiring an individual from outside of the state to make calls into Minnesota? Is that what creates fraud, or is it the misrepresentation of that individual saying they're calling from within Minnesota and they are not?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, would be the latter.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks, if they were calling from outside of the state, this individual's outside of the jurisdiction of the state of Minnesota, how would we enforce that law then?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, I believe that we would enforce it against the company or the organization that individual works for.
Mr. Chair,
Limmer.
I'm trying to figure out how this bill will actually work. I like to vote for bills that actually have teeth in them that'll enforce the law. And I'm just wondering, what would be the consequence for the fraud? Would it be a penalty? Would we imprison the CEO of the company? Would we look for that individual that was actually the one on the telephone? How do we, or what would be the sentence or the potential sentence of fraud according to the definition that you have in subdivision 4 for violating this law?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I'm guessing that what would happen here is what we're doing is we're putting into statute what constitutes a violation, and it would be a violation for someone calling from outside of the country to misrepresent that they were actually calling, say, from inside the state of Minnesota. If they're working for a company that's licensed to do business with the state of Minnesota and that company's employees are misrepresenting themselves by fraudulently saying they're calling from somewhere else, then I would assume a call to the Department of Commerce would be appropriate for them to pursue a remedy through the department.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olson, maybe you could answer this other question that I had earlier. Do you know if this would include political phone calls, or is it simply for the purposes of making sales?
Senator Limmer, there is a reference in the bill to a section in statute that specifically excludes political parties.
Okay.
Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sparks, would you yield for a question?
We yield. Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Sparks, can you give us one specific example of the kind of problem that this bill will solve?
Senator Sparks. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll answer that one for you. Personal experience. Ordered an online service for my son a year later, they wanted to renew the service. I wanted to cancel the service. I tried calling several locations. I finally got the number. They put me through a 20-minute waiting period, transferred me to another set of individuals. Finally, I asked, where were you located? Because I'd like to know where I'm calling. Because you have no idea where you're calling. If there's going to be some sort of recourse, you know, you at least be able to track down the location of the company. You don't know if you're calling in the United States or somewhere across the globe. They have refused to give me their location. They finally said, we're up north someplace. They would not give me that information. I would like to at least have known if I'm calling California, Minnesota, someplace. I may not be able to have any recourse legally, but at least if I needed to track down or send a letter to someone, I could track them down. I believe this gives the consumer protection to answer those questions.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl and Senator Sparks, I'm not sure how knowing where the company that gave you poor service on the phone was located or the call was being made from would have made any difference, but I think this bill is pretty standard. It doesn't solve any identifiable problems. It doesn't do anything. It isn't needed, but does kind of sound good. So I suppose we should just pass it.
Mr. President.
Further discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A1 amendment.
I'll get you out of this. Give him something else to think about.
Yeah. Secretary will report the Murphy A1 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves to amend House File 116 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 10th as follows. Page 1, line 20. This is Amendment A-1.
Senator Murphy on the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman and members, and Senator Hand, this is probably what you were getting at earlier. This is an amendment that was taken out. This was part of the original bill. and I'm attempting to put it back in because I think that this adds teeth to the bill. Basically what it says is that an individual who is a Minnesota resident who receives a telephone solicitation or places a telephone call to a customer sales center, they have the right to ask where that center is located if they are going to be giving their financial information, bank accounts, credit card numbers over the phone. The reason we feel this is important is, once again, it's for enforcement purposes. It's pretty tough to run down everything if somebody's in a call center that is not in the United States, and it's a little bit easier to run down those calls and possible instances of fraud if it is in the United States. The person can ask the individual, are you calling from inside the United States? They say, no, we're not. We're calling from the North Pole. Okay, well then I would like to speak to someone in the United States. And then if that company has that ability, they transfer that person to someone who is located inside the United States. If not, the person can hang up and do business with somebody in the United States. It's pretty simple, and I would ask for a roll call ask for the members' support.
Got three hands for a roll call. Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, I just have a procedural question. If this amendment is adopted and if it goes into the bill, would that make it the language in this bill identical to what was in the House bill? Because if that's the case, I think that we'd be sending the identical language back to the House, and I'm not quite sure that that's how we procedurally would do it. I think normally we'd move to adopt the House language rather than to amend it to be exactly like the House language. I don't know if there's differences between the two. I'm just pointing that out, that adopting this could be wind up with that identical House language, and I think we need to be aware of that.
All right, so further discussion. We're on the Murphy Amendment. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or President. I'm not sure.
Chair.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Senator Murphy, I'm looking at my screen, and I'm seeing what you're adding to the bill already in the bill.
No, it's not. It's a House file, but we're dealing with the Senate language, so it gets
Thank
a little
you,
confusing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. No, that's a legitimate question. Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am following where we're at here with the House file and such, and the reason I'm familiar with this is because this is the exact language that the Commerce Committee took out to make this bill, I think, better and more workable. We had a lot of discussion about this in the Commerce Committee. This is a committee that Senator Murphy does not serve on. The author of the bill, Senator Sparks, does, and in a moment I'm going to ask Senator Sparks what his take on this amendment is, if he wants this to go on or what direction he has. Hopefully he won't say it's the will of the body, because I would like some direction from him, because we spent a lot of time on this in committee. Members, this amendment that's being put forth here, you should understand, this is not about consumer protection. This is not about protecting citizens from fraud. And how do we know that? Well, we know that this is being backed by the AFL-CIO. Fine labor organization. But since when has the AFL-CIO been interested in, as a legislative agenda, something like this? It makes no sense. The Communications Workers Union, another fine union, represents a lot of good workers. Again, they're the primary backers of this bill. Deals with telecommunications. Is it part of their agenda, consumer protection? I don't think so. I think a legitimate agenda item for the AFL-CIO and the communications worker is jobs. It is jobs. And I wish that in committee we spent some time talking about jobs, because it is a legitimate issue, and I wish that those unions, I wish Senator Murphy and Senator Sparks would focus on the issue and talk to us honestly about this bill being about jobs. It's a labor issue. It's not about consumer protections.
Mr. President, point of order. If Senator Gerlach wants to say that I'm trying to be dishonest here, just go right out and say it, Senator Gerlach.
Let's take a step back and smile a little bit.
Right.
Are you smiling?
I will, Mr. Chair.
I was on a sidebar here, but if... Slow her down a little bit. Senator Gerlach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the point I would like to make, and I apologize, Senator Murphy, I would say you're not being dishonest. I think you're not telling the complete picture. I think that we're all entitled to know, really, what the complete picture on a bill is. So, members, this amendment is undoing the work that the Commerce Committee did by amending that out. We did, I think, another minor change to the bill that Senator Sparks talked about, and this is just simply rolling it right back to where it was. Members, I would strongly encourage you to vote down this amendment. And so I would actually, before I finish up here, I would like to ask the author, Senator Sparks, if he would yield for a question.
Senator Sparks will yield. It's not his amendment, but he will yield.
Well, Senator Sparks oftentimes will ask, when an amendment is made to an author's bill, will ask, well, what is your take on this? What do you recommend the body do? And hopefully you will just leave it to the will of the body. I hope you have a thought or an opinion on this, since we did spend a lot of time in committee on this, talked about this. Can you give the body some guidance on what you would like us to do on this amendment?
Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Gerlach. Obviously, I think we've done a lot of work in the committee of the whole, so I think it would only be fair for the other 66 members to be able to decide whether or not they support this amendment. We'll find that out. Obviously, as the chief author of this bill, I would support the Murphy Amendment. That was the way the bill was introduced in its original state.
We're on the amendment by Senator Murphy. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I, as chair of the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee and representing the work of that committee, I would encourage you to not support the amendment offered by Senator Murphy. And when this bill came before us in the past, it was about jobs, but I think that it's taken kind of an unseemly turn. And I think that we're going to see cases. I know that there's a member here who has a personal experience with a family member who speaks with an accent, who's an American citizen, who works for an American call center, and is challenged from time to time, perhaps even often, about where they're located, called names, sworn at. You're going to see call centers not real keen on hiring people who have an accent. I'm sorry, we don't want to go there. We don't want to go in that direction. The cruel irony of the bill, of the amendment, is that if a company has a call center overseas and also a call center in the United States, because of the inconvenience to their customers who have to now be transferred, perhaps be transferred to a call center that's not open at that particular time in the United States, have to wait till the next day, perhaps, to answer a question that's important to them at the time, they actually may be in a position of closing those call centers in the United States, costing more United States jobs. Members, we don't want to go there. I really think that what the Commerce Committee did, the bill did not pass, as you see this with this amendment that's being offered. The bill failed in committee with that language in it. It was after it was amended and taken out that the bill did pass, and a subsequent hearing. And it was because of that, those reasons that I've given you. So I would encourage a no vote on the amendment, please.
On the Murphy Amendment, Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 21 ayes and 41 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate file or House File 116. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to make sure I'm on the right version of the bill here. And I looked at the amendment, and if I go to Senate File 162, that should be the correct text now that it has not been amended. Is that correct? And I guess
that is correct. The
thank
Senate
you, Mr.
language was amended on to the okay. House file. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one of the things that I was trying to ask about earlier on that prompted Senator Murphy to offer his amendment, but I'm not sure that my point was in reference to the language on line 2.4 that talks about that it is a fraud for a person to willfully violate this section. And so the question is if there's someone in a call center in another country who says they're from the United States when they're not, they're committing fraud under the basis of this law, but how does that help us prosecute anything or anyone for any bad action? And that's my question. How does this definition of fraud help people who are concerned about being defrauded?
Further discussion on House File 116.
Mr. Chair,
Sparks.
And Senator Hand, I think the amendment that was just voted down would have given us some more recourse, and so now I believe it would be up to the Department of Commerce to enforce that language. That amendment that just went down took a lot of the teeth out of the bill.
And so, Mr. Chairman, and
Senator
Sparks, if the fraud is not prosecutable, what protection does this offer consumers?
Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill should have come to judiciary. I don't think it did, but it should have come to judiciary and we could have cleaned it up and clarified it. The remedy that's provided under this bill, because it's made, if you look at what the violation section is, it says it's a fraud under 325F.69, which is consumer fraud, which in turn doesn't send it to the Department of Commerce. It sends it to the Attorney General's office, or there can be a private Attorney General remedy as well. So any person could bring a lawsuit privately in their own name if they've been injured. And they could recover lawyer's fees, cost of investigation, all because of what? Because somebody who's from India says I'm from Minnesota? The thing that is still concerning me, and if Senator Sparks would yield to a question, would you yield to a question, Senator Sparks?
Sparks will yield.
Senator Sparks, what is the injury? So if a person gets a call or makes one, and the person is making the call from India, and he says, I'm from Minnesota. So what? What is the injury to the person who's making the call in Minnesota that would allow them to bring a private attorney general remedy under statute 8.31?
Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair and Senator Neville, again, it's hard to argue because the original bill had that subdivision 2.1, 2.7 that had some of the enforcement in. The bill that currently is before us, now, all it would do would allow those consumers to ask where the call center is located. They can't be re-referred back to the United States because that provision in the bill is out.
Mr. President,
Senator Neville,
and members, I would submit to you that by itself, just telling somebody they're from Minnesota when they're really from Mexico or India doesn't create any damage whatsoever. That by itself. Now, maybe if you gave them financial information and they used it fraudulently, then you've been injured perhaps. But it doesn't do anybody any injury or harm whatsoever not to know where the call is being made from, as long as the information that you get is used honestly. And so, with all due respect, this bill doesn't do anything. This bill should not pass because it will result in nothing but nuisance lawsuits over injuries that don't even exist. But there'll be lawyers trying to ask for lawyers' fees or investigation fees, and the most that people will be able to claim is that they have nominal damages, $1, and who knows how much they're going to get for lawyers' fees and other things.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm just wondering, given Senator Neville's comments, if it would be appropriate for me to make a motion or to move that this bill be referred to the Judiciary Committee for further work. So, Mr. Chairman, I move that we refer the bill to Judiciary.
I think that's an appropriate motion. Okay, when the committee do arise that the bill be referred to the Judiciary Committee. That's your motion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Sparks.
Before we act on that, could I ask the chair of the Judiciary Committee if she expects to have any further hearings in the next 6 days?
You may ask her, yes. Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair, if something comes to us, we will try to accommodate it, but given the time that we're at, I don't anticipate calling any more Judiciary Committees in the next 3 to 4 days that we have.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know we're running out of time here in the session. We're getting down to the end, and we've got a lot of important things to work on, but I'm wondering if, even if it doesn't get acted on, if the Judiciary Committee cannot meet before the end of this session, the bill would still be alive into next year, would it not? So that if it was referred to the Judiciary Committee, it could be taken up next year. And given that this may not have a lot of critical timeliness to it, maybe it would be appropriate to do that anyway.
That I believe that's correct. We're on the hand motion to re-refer to the bill to the Judiciary Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Any further discussion on House File 116? The question occurs on the motion by Senator Sparks that House File 116 be recommended to pass. All those
Mr. President.
Before the vote. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to make a couple of brief remarks on the legislation. Senator Neville mentioned that this bill doesn't do anything, and I tend to agree, but there is one thing I think that this bill does do, and it has nothing to do with bringing back call centers to the United States. What I think the bill does do is send a message that we, as a legislative body, are going to tolerate the jingoism associated with the debate surrounding this issue. It's no longer about identity theft, because that's not in the bill. It's no longer about being transferred back to the United States if you reach a foreign country, because that's not in the bill. The only thing it says is that you have to tell the customer where you're located. Now, here's the problem with that. And I think Senator Shy alluded to this earlier. My mother works as a customer service representative for Target. Target has call centers in India, by the way. But she doesn't work in India. She works at the Bryn Mawr facility on Penn Avenue in Minneapolis. And my mother, having immigrated from India, having become a United States citizen, still speaks her native language often. And as a result, she has a foreign-sounding accent. And she answers the phone every day with this Indian accent, the traditional Indian stereotypical accent. And so just about daily, an angry customer, and oftentimes these people are angry because they are calling customer service, demand to speak to someone in the United States. And ironically, just yesterday, my mom came to me and said, I had an angry customer today, and they asked me where I was. And my mom said, well, I'm in Minneapolis. And the woman said, you're not in Minneapolis. And my mom replied, well, yes, I am. I'm in Minneapolis. And she said, no, you're not in Minneapolis. And so as a result of company policy, she transferred the customer on to someone else because the customer wasn't comfortable talking to someone with an accent because they thought she was in some foreign land, when in fact she wasn't. And that's, I think, what this bill is really about. It's about people who don't like people with foreign accents. You know, for some reason or another, when you call customer service, you're going to be angry at that, at this person. And I think what this bill legitimizes in law is that we can be angry with the person on the other end of the line, not because of the service they receive, but because of the ethnicity of the person at the other end of the line. And I think that's wrong. I really think that's wrong. You know, it's really ironic. It's ironic that the people who operate these customer service centers in foreign countries such as India actually have a better English accent than the employees here in the United States, including my mother. The people in India are actually trained not to have that Indian accent, but here my mother, who works in America, works in Minneapolis, has good benefits, she's the one with the accent. I just find that to be so ironic about this whole debate. And so, that's what this bill does. It creates a giant irony. And that's about it. That's about it. So I really think that we ought to be spending our time creating jobs in Minnesota. We ought to be spending this time and energy establishing call centers all around the state. We shouldn't be offshoring. We should be north-shoring. We should be sending those call centers and whatever outsourcing facility. This is all about outsourcing, after all. Establishing them on the North Shore, in the Iron Range, southwestern Minnesota, and elsewhere. And here's the other thing. You know, in October, I hope to be joining the governor on a trade mission to India. And we hope to be telling that population of 1 billion people what a welcoming place Minnesota is for their business. And unfortunately, a lot of them are going to have the news articles from Minnesota reported in India that we're not interested in bringing jobs to Minnesota. What we're interested in is making these statements about foreigners. And that's how that's perceived. We live in a global market, and so we're going to have to come to terms with what other people think of us in terms of doing business. It's not just about foreign policy and wars and what people think of us across the globe in terms of our foreign policy. It's our business policy, too. And yeah, we ought to be protecting Minnesota businesses and American jobs. But that doesn't mean we interject ethnic bias into our policies. That, I think, is wrong. Look, if we've got issues with identity theft, we work on them with those other countries. If we got issues with job creation here in Minnesota, then we work on those things. By the way, there are three major Indian companies in Minnesota providing hundreds of jobs to Minnesotans. Suzlon Wind Energy, Mithil Steel, and a new one being established, Esser Steel. Hundreds of union-paying jobs in Minnesota. And now we're going to them to say, well, we don't like the jobs you're taking from us, but you go ahead and spend your money in here, no problem. It doesn't work that way. And by the way, I also don't accept that there is this huge sucking sound of call center jobs out of Minnesota in the United States. There are some, but a lot of them stay here. And by the way, a lot of them who formerly were in other countries, and I know about the Indian experience, are actually coming back because it didn't work for their business. So there's a lot of cross-pollination going on in the global marketplace. And look, if we want to set up trade barriers, that's a whole philosophy. If we want to set up price controls, that's another whole philosophy we can debate. But just to say we don't like you because of your foreign accent, I don't think that's right. I just don't think that's right. You know, I've heard proponents of this bill actually say we want to pass this legislation because the person at the end of the other line didn't understand what's up with that meant. What's up with that? I just think that's funny to me, because someone on the other end of the line doesn't speak American or Minnesotan or Louisianan or Cajun or Californian. Now we have to pass a law. And that frustrates me. I think we can just be doing so much better for Minnesota jobs. We can just be spending our time so much better. And that's why I'm going to vote no.
Senator Olson, and we're close to a vote.
Senator Mr. Olson. Chairman, members, I agree with Senator Chaudhry, and with all due respect, if Senator Sparks doesn't wish to withdraw his bill or send it to committee for further work to do something important, I do believe we should vote against it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also appreciate Senator Chaudhry and Senator Scheid's comments. I agree with them. And I would, because we've had such a vigorous debate here today, that it might be worthwhile to have a roll call on this bill. And I'd like to request a roll call.
Three hands. There'll be a roll call. Secretary will take the roll on the bill.
as we can. We have to make it look like we're working. It's the end of session.
We got to make it look.
Yeah. Even though we know nothing's going to come out of session again. This came down. We're not going to get nothing done, so.
We're not going to get done?
We're not going to get nothing done.
Or just not going to.
People with higher pay grades than us.
Tax every 3 years.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. If I was governor for a day, we'd have been out of here a month ago and we'd have done stuff that made sense.
There you go.
Statement as governor would be get her done.
Secretary will close the roll. In 32 ayes, 33 nays, the motion does not prevail.
Is that a
bill will be progressed.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President.
Senate will be in order. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, why don't we take Senator Conference Committee report on Senate File 118?
Thank you. Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and Conference Committee report on Senate File 118 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee.
Okay. Senator Pappas, the differences of the
thank you, Mr. President. This had to do with adding two legislative members to the CAP board, the Capital Area Architecture and Planning Board, and the Senate made them kind of an ex officio, those who represent the Capital Area and non-voting, and the House had a rural member, and so we both kind of backed off our proposals, and our compromise was that we would add two legislators to the CAP board, undesignated, rural, metro, or ex officio, and then we would set the quorum at 6, because they've been having trouble getting a quorum. And so there would be 12 members on the CAP board, but the quorum would remain at 6 instead of 7, and I guess we can do that. So we thought that was a good compromise, and I'd appreciate your support.
On the Pappas motion, Senator Rest.
Mr. President, I just want to thank Senator Pappas for her really creative compromise in this bill, and I hope members will support the conference committee.
The motion is by Senator Pappas that we adopt the bill and be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All those in favor? Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, if you have 12 members, a quorum is not 6. Even if you put it in law, a quorum is not 6. 7 is a quorum.
On to Pappas' motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. There are many boards, Senator Betzel, that will set their quorum at 1/3, many nonprofit boards. It's just with parliamentary procedure, Masons, it is if you're silent, it has to be a majority. But you can set it at a different level.
Saying Senator Betzel is wrong again? Huh? Is that the second time this year? or third time, fourth time. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give Senate File 118 its third reading.
Senate File 118, a bill for an act relating to state government, adding legislators who represent the capital area as non-voting members of the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. We had 61 ayes, one nay. Bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, this will be related to the omnibus transportation policy bill that we passed the other day. And the House file has arrived, and so this would be to put the Senate language on the House file, yeah. The policy bill. So I'd move that an urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19.
I've moved to take it from the table first, and then.
I would move that House File 1351 be taken from the table.
Table, yes. On the motion by Pogemiller, Senator Pogemiller. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Now the suspension of the rules.
Mr. President, I would move the urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to House File 1351, that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 1351 its second and third reading and placed on its final passage.
Have to discuss that at all or anything?
Murph.
All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Second reading.
House File number 1351.
Second reading. Senator Murphy, do you have an amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would move that House File 1351 delete everything after the enacting clause and delete the title of House File 1351 and insert the language after the enacting clause and the title of Senate File 1971, the fourth engrossment.
Does he have to tell us? Okay. Tell us a little bit about your amendment. Are you substituting?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the House language came over, and so this is the motion to put the Senate language on the House bill.
Okay. Understand that? Secretary, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Third reading? Third reading of Senate File 1351.
House File 1351, a bill for an act related to transportation, modifying or adding provisions related to geotechnical investigations, etc.
Secretary,
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
We just want to give people a heads up. Senator Murphy, the vote, were there a few people who voted no?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, yes. This is the omnibus transportation bill. Primary seat belts are in here. The child passenger restraint seats are in here. And there is also the provisional driver's license in here. So there was about, I think there was like a dozen or 15 no votes on this, folks. And everybody knows kind of what's in this bill. So let's vote.
Okay. Everybody clear? Secretary.
Mr. President, it was apparently 52 to 12.
Okay.
So there are 12 members who want to pay attention here.
Secretary will take the roll.
What other work we got there, Patsy?
All senators. What's he telling me to? We're waiting. Apparently, Senator Bach and Scoyer want to vote on this, and they're on their way. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be at 53 ayes, 9 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Mr. President, do you have any other work at the desk?
Reports of committees.
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was re-referred Senate File 998, a bill for an act relating to construction codes, recodifying and modifying construction codes, etc. Report the same back with the recommendation the bill be amended, and when sent it, and when so amended, the bill do pass and be referred to the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs.
Mr. President,
I move to adopt the report on the Pogue-Miller motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator
Mr. President, I have a motion on behalf of Senator Bach.
That's Senator Bach's motion. Senator Pogorelli.
Senator, I would move that Senate File 1933, number 35 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, then I believe that's all the work at the desk. Members, I'm going to move to, I would like to move to recess to the call of the chair, and it will be only to accept committee reports from the Rules Committee later this evening. And so members would not need to stick around. Rules Committee members will need to stick around. And then I would intend that tomorrow, I think we would come in at 9:30. DFL would meet at 8:30 in caucus. And so the session would start at 9:30. Senator Senjum?
Senator Senjum, did you have an
answer? Thank you, Mr. President. And before I forget, it's going to be a long day tomorrow, from what I understand. And Senate Republican caucus, perhaps better caucus up at about 8:30 or so. We have a number of bills. Senator Limmer is lobbying for breakfast. We'll see what we can do. We tried that again, last week. It worked pretty well. Senator Pogorelli, what I want to know, and I think what a lot of our members would like to have a little better idea on, is as we approach, we've got 6 days left, as we look to tomorrow and we look to the Rules Committee today, we're either going to hit the finish line here or be running off the cliff, and I'm not sure which one. Perhaps none of us know at this point, but could you, Senator Pogorelli, just give the body a little idea as to where we're going over the next couple of days, at least in terms of approach? You have enough people talking to you, Mr. Majority Leader? Handlers?
This way.
Mr. Majority Leader, you have many handlers. And
what did he say? Many handlers.
We got you back. We got you back. Mr. Majority Leader, could you give us, though, in a more serious tone? We're 6 days left. We've got a lot of work to do here. I know there are some things happening. I'm not sure how much you can share. We're going to go to Rules Committee. We're going to, if you will, load up some bills. But can you give us kind of an idea as how you see the next couple of days? All of us in the body would appreciate that.
Sure. Senator Senjum, excellent question. As members know, there are six House files, I believe, in the Senate Rules Committee. And they are vehicles for trying to accommodate the vetoed bills. And the members of those conference committees have been examining the veto letters and talking with the administration and have worked to try to put together bills that they think the governor could be supportive of. And so the intent in the Rules Committee is to process those today, and they will be, by and large, the conference committee reports with changes to accommodate the veto suggestions. The suggestions in the letters of veto of why the governor felt he could not support those bills. In addition, we hope to process, I had mentioned earlier that we did have targets for those two remaining conference committees taxes and K-12. And we are prepared to process amendments there to vehicle bills that would close those bills, leaving the tax conference committee open and the K-12 conference committee open. But the delete everything would be, for those two bills, would be bills that we also believe the governor might be able to support. We are in constant contact with the executive branch, and there will be a little give and take on this process in the next day or so, I presume, just like with the public safety bill. We are trying to figure out a way to pass some bills that the governor will sign so that we can narrow down these differences. Ideally, all six of these would come out of the Rules Committee, be supported in the Senate, be supported in the House, and the governor would sign them. That was what we would like to accomplish, if we can. If not, if we process bills where we think we've gotten about as close as we can with the governor, then, and if we passed it here and the House passed it then the governor has 3 days to consider. For example, we don't have a pre-agreement. If we didn't have a pre-agreement, he would have 3 days to consider those one of those bills then, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then hopefully he would sign them. And if not, we would then try to do something else, I guess. So, Senator Senjum, the attempt here is to try to figure out a way to kind of, in an orderly process, consummate the session.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, and Senator Pogermiller, thank you for that that explanation. Is it, Senator Pogermiller, if you yield again, is it generally fair to believe that these elusive targets will have been revealed by the end of the day, with perhaps the exception of the Tax Committee?
Senator Pogermiller.
I hope they will all be revealed like by the end of the day. I think what would prevent that is if we were in a discussion with the executive branch that we felt was of the level of productivity that we would be willing to not process one of those tomorrow. It's a give and a take here. We're trying to figure out how we can inch forward in an orderly fashion.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator Pogermiller.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, then I would move that. Oh, Senator, could we take one motion from Senator Vickerman on motions? He wants to get a conference committee rolling. Oh.
There's apparently three, four of them, if you want to.
No, they all do. Okay. We're remaining under motions. Senator Vickerman, did you have a motion? Right. We're reverting to messages. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments to concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2226, a bill for an act related to state government clarifying private cemeteries. Senate File 2226 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewis, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File Number 2226, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee and conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on a part of the House. Members, this is the private cemetery bill.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Latz? Senator Lurie.
We have the message on Senate File 1048. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 1048, a bill for an act related to state government changing the State Indian Affairs Council. Senate File 1048 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewis, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Lurie, do you have a motion to make?
Yes, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments made by the House to Senate File 1048, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Lurie motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. One more message.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 1333, a bill for an act relating to commerce, enacting a car buyer's bill of rights, etc. Senate File 1333 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewis, Chief
Senator Latz.
Representatives.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1333, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Okay.
Is that it? That's it for today.
We're going to recess, I believe. Senator Wergen, for what... Senator Wergen.
Mr. President, I have a motion on my desk as well.
Yours is a concurrence, and apparently we're going to wait on that one until tomorrow morning. These are just setting up the conference committee so they can get started. We'll do yours.
Right. Mr. President, if I might, then members, you have a note about this bill on your desk that's there for the second time. Could you keep it till tomorrow so I don't have to print it a third time?
Okay. All right, Senator Saltzman, did you have an announcement to make?
Sure. Yes. Sure. I do, Mr. President, and that is that business, industry, and jobs will be meeting immediately after session today to take up Senate File 998. We look forward to seeing you there as soon as possible. Thank you.
Is that room 318? Is that correct? 318? Yeah.
Do we have any excuses?
Okay, before, we've got some excuses today. Senator Stump, Valde, Vandeveer from 1 to 125. Senator Scoy from 1 to 250. Senator Bach from 1 to 250. Senator Marty from 220 to 250. And Senator Ortman, 230 on. Senator Betzold.
Mr. President, I had sent out a notice on the conference committee on the notary fees, and it was to be at the call of the chair. It does appear that since the House is adjourned, we may try to get it on later on this afternoon. So I'm just announcing for the parties who have an interest to be available for it. Senator Scheid is available. I don't know if Senator Ortman is still around, but we are going to try to still meet this afternoon sometime.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Could the Senate Republican Leadership Group just meet for 10 minutes in the conference room, retiring room, after adjournment?
Okay. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, then, tomorrow I guess we'll meet at 10. Senator Senjum had asked if we'd meet at 10. So we'll meet at 10, so Majority Caucus at 9. Majority Caucus at 9 in room 112, I guess. And... I would then move that, so members, we're going to recess, but only to process committee reports later. And if Senator Senjum is willing, we might appoint some conference committees later, too. but so members don't need to stick around.
Mr. President?
Senator Olson.
Senator Pogue-Miller, did you indicate when Rules Committee would be meeting?
I was going to do that next. Senate Rules will meet at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock. And so, Mr. President, I'd move to recess to the call of the chair.
On the motion by Senator Pogue-Miller to recess to the call of the chair, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess.